cost benefit analysis. I want to go in there and take it apart so I understand all the assumptions before I start using this as gospel, whatever you want to call it, to move forward. And right now I'm only seeing in that cost benefit the price of one boiler. They actually didn't include the cost of the line. If you just look at the cost of one boiler replacing a fuel oil boiler, it's a 2-year payback. Mm-hmm. I put in the cost of the line, it goes to 4 years. It would go up from there because we don't need to replace just one boiler. We need to replace at least two, not three. So it goes up.
When you say payback, you mean that what's paying us back is the differential cost of the fuel, less natural gas
it's
versus more
just
oil?
Just the cost of the fuel. Because natural gas is less expensive.
And we're using fewer BTUs because it's more efficient.
We are using fewer, yes, we're getting more out of the combustion. So, we'd be using less fuel to produce more heat. So, not really BTUs.
Not just paying.
Yeah, I was
just
getting confused
trying
to calculate.
Yeah,
no, yeah, a few steps in there.
Yeah. And just the cost of the payback period for one boiler would be 2 years, and for both boilers is I'm still not clear on the
right.
Payback.
So the to replace, and again, this is I don't feel I've done my due diligence
haven't
on this
fact
cost.
Haven't checked all of these numbers.
The cost benefit. One boiler, swapping one boiler that's a fuel oil boiler with a natural gas. Just based on, we're not buying fuel oil anymore, we'd be buying natural gas. A 2-year payback on that investment of just equipment.
Just the boiler.
Just the equipment.
Yeah.
If you add in, well, it's not really just the boiler, it's the $220,000 for the gas line.
Oh, it is. Oh,
then
that's right.
Then you're at 4 years, 4.00.
For one
boiler, right? But we don't need one.
But you don't have that cost for the second or third boiler, right?
Assuming that
for the line,
the cost that is correct for one, mm-hmm. it shouldn't change for three. If you're replacing three with,
but
three.
You're only running one, like
one line.
You run one, you won't run plus two. You're not
running all three on
all
that.
Three at full capacity.
But you're running three with fuel oil.
Yes, right now.
Yeah.
One to two. In the summer, they run one.
Because one's
for
hot water.
For hot water.
Right.
And then in the winter, they run two.
Yeah. I just don't think your analysis is going to change that much from one to three.
Yeah.
Because you're mainly relying on one now.
Right.
The other two are kind of...
But I think it's the fuel cost savings because then you
might be more shorter.
Because you're going to be increasing the capital equipment cost, but those aren't running as much, so you won't be... reaping in that much savings from the fuel cost. So I think it's actually going to be, it's going to go from 2 to probably 4 to probably 6 or something like that. That's just going
to
in my head.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on the Flex Tech study?
Mm-hmm. So the Flex Tech study, this is a great opportunity for NYSERDA. And the study allows you to do... engineering analysis, comprehensive energy audits, things like that, and it's a cost share with NYSERDA, so they're covering 50% of the cost of the eligible scope of work. This study we put together specifically to look at, with the understanding that the boilers were failing, so that we have to have a plan that's actionable in the very near term.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do this as like kind of a 5-year planning horizon where we could really we have to be able to do because mm-hmm. they're failing that badly. But at the same time, this is a big system with a big building with a lot of mechanicals. So I'll read to you. Oh, here it is. the study is to investigate and report on near-term heating needs using energy efficient equipment and clean alternatives to natural gas combustion equipment for long-term energy reduction plans at the plant.
So that study won't begin until this is carried.
No.
So
it's underway. We actually have a draft of the report right now.
Okay. So it's alternatives to if natural gas.
It's more like there's a pretty. It's like, how do we do both? Pretty mm-hmm. much, how do we deal with the immediate need to replace the boilers? How do you move forward knowing that having some type of fossil fuel-based system there mm-hmm. is likely necessary for redundancy, mm-hmm. right? And then how do you preserve the opportunities in the future then to say, like, okay, we want to connect a solar thermal system to that, mm-hmm. or we want to go to heat pump hot water heaters. Mm-hmm. How do we then have a plan and how do we not do something now when we do a boiler replacement that ties our hands or precludes one of those renewable options in the future and makes them look entirely too expensive or too difficult? Yeah. That was the...
So my follow-up question to that is, what is the benefit of approving this now rather than at the completion of that study? Or the reasoning. Or
right. So the fossil fuel component, unless we were to go, again, the $5 million mm-hmm. option is going to be necessary
okay.
for whatever we do. This is going, the study, finalizing the study is going to give us some numbers on payback for things like solar thermal. It's going to let us dive into, okay, how is it best to configure the domestic hot water? Mm-hmm. What can we do with that?
Okay, I guess.
Things like that.
Okay, that.
I think there's two other things that I would add to that. One is that Central Hudson is doing some work in the area. And so the $220 price for the lateral is lower than it might be if they had to come out to that the area.
If you haven't noticed.
And the other thing that I would say is... many have noticed. And I think the other thing that, as I thought of this before the Public Works meeting, during the Public Works meeting, and today, is that I think this is actually the first step in our five-year plan. On the basis that it's a law enforcement facility, and so to imagine that we were entirely geothermal, even with no backup for a combustible fuel source, it might in the future be hydrogen or some other, you know, immediate online demand. But I think that a law enforcement center, possibly a hospital, are the exceptions to my general rule that we don't need backup fossil fuel. And I think there are, going into the future, a few instances where we should use this very mm-hmm. powerful, precious, valuable, but today mm-hmm. completely overused fuel. So I think if we think of this as the first step to a plan in which this is just the backup system, you know, $500,000 for a backup system at a 6-acre building is really. I've started to think of it, and I'm much happier about it now mm-hmm. than I was mm-hmm. Tuesday.
So, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think, you know, there are issues with geothermal. The technology mm-hmm. isn't quite there yet. I know I've spoken before about Dandelion. Entering into a contract with the Village of Rhinebeck where Dandelion is basically digging all of the loops for geothermal so that if you live in the Village of Rhinebeck and you want to transfer, you want to turn over to geothermal, all you have to do is pay to hook up mm-hmm. the loop, which is cheap, right, yeah. in comparison to having to dig. Mm-hmm. So that's great, but I myself called Dandelion. I'm actually mm-hmm. in a similar situation where I need a new boiler. Mm-hmm. I switch to gas, can I go to geothermal, can I go to biomass? And the technology isn't quite mm-hmm. there yet. And so, and you think even if you want to move to that technology, even currently as it stands, you want redundancy, mm-hmm. let alone a big, massive mm-hmm. unit like you're talking about. So it seems to me that it's a wash. You mm-hmm. need the backup mm-hmm. anyway.
Yeah, especially. Right?
And so you're getting a backup and you're getting a better backup by a natural gas. And also there are all sorts of, you know, we tend to think of geothermal as just being completely clean. but it relies on electricity, and electricity is some of the dirtiest fuel.
We would love to put PV solar on the roof there and then have that, you know, take more of the electricity load.
But you still need that backup. So, so if I was explaining this to the caucus, you know, really, this is the needed step forward. One, because the boilers, our current system, lifespan is shot. And this, along with this, will give us the security, the energy security, while being the most financially and energy, in terms of energy, way to go. But also, with combined with the NYSERDA FlexTech study, we then have the ability to, if it proves beneficial, to add, to branch out.
None of the green energy.
It's possible.
Future innovation is foreclosed by what you're
saying. And also, I think it's an important point that Amanda made too, and about the real seriousness of having that security in a facility like a prison.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know if you guys followed what happened in New York City with that federal prison.
Yeah.
Where the heating system went shot, and it was a humanitarian disaster. I mean, I think, you know, it's of all the things, you know, so I think that's a really good point, you know, in terms of how we think about this.
So I want to back up on a couple points, and one is that geothermal powered by solar with a battery backup is very reliable. I don't think, you know, and when I talk about transitioning to renewable energy economy anymore, I say a renewable energy economy with storage and efficiency. I have just, you know, given the urgency of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, I have a real hard time agreeing to any new fossil fuel infrastructure. I also am concerned about $462,000, or you had said $500. Am I missing something, or
rounding? And again, it's
You may have just been rounding.
There's the capital project amendment that's in front of you. That's the extra $224.
Right.
That brings that total capital to $5 and change. Because that capital was the energy efficiency capital, which was the $250,000 that we grant money from NYSERDA that we used at the law enforcement center to do lighting, LED lighting on the correction side. We've seen through LED lighting a decrease of electricity use there by more than 500,000 kilowatts a year right now, which is significant.
But this is 242 and then 220, right?
It was, yep. So the 242 was the NYSERDA clean energy communities plus a little bit of county money in there, a tiny bit.
Okay.
242? No, because that was all NYSERDA money.
The 242 is county capital and
that was the existing
serial
capital,
to be paid back by
the 242 was not. I just want to look at the right thing before I say something about the existing capital.
That's for Central Hudson, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's for Central Hudson.
But for the
and then the existing was at 281, and then the increase is 242. I don't know if that's contingency because it sounds like it's 22,000. It's 10% on those.
Yeah, and that's what they're slated for.
So So that sounds like, it sounds like the contract cost and a 10% contingency.
Okay.
I don't know, because that this part of it definitely was handled by public
purchasing.
Yeah.
But I think that's
I looked
what
at those numbers.
Yeah, and it was a 10% contingency in it.
Okay.
And what would the cost be if it is? So obviously there's a sensitivity to it because Central Hudson is currently mm-hmm. in the neighborhood. Does that, so that gives us a significant savings just because the
deployment.
Yeah.
And they've outsourced it to Mullen. John Mullen.
Yeah, so it would be significantly more
if
we were doing this outside
of
them.
If it was a standalone.
Yeah.
It would be certainly.
I do know it's a long run because if you're familiar, the power plant mm-hmm. for the jail is, of course, way in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on rock in that area. So those things definitely add significantly to the cost.
And that would affect your thermal as well, not that you're considering it, but at this point.
Right.
But it's on rock.
Yeah, and, you know, my other concern is, you know, with the flex tech study, mm-hmm. if and the New York Prize opportunity, New York Prize, if we ultimately go to geothermal, is you said it might be as much as a $5 million system. What would New York Prize help with that?
Good question. I think if you are successful on the third round, I think it gets you some money towards the full design. I don't think it does the full design, and
okay.
it doesn't touch the construction. And again, we're in this place where there's an imminent failure. And
So the way I think we need to look at it, since I don't know the statistics on fuel oil in New York State, where it may be a little better, but oil is increasingly from fracking as well. So I'm seeing this more as a trade between the oil and the natural gas, which is a five-year stabilizing. And during that time, the system pays for itself, so we actually save money. So it actually is a system that meets where we are, which is we're not ready to build the geothermal or the solar thermal or any of that today. But if we do this in five years, we will be no worse off. We'll have a backup, and we're not tying ourselves into anything to prevent us from making that transition as soon as we're ready. And
but we haven't yet seen a real analysis of the geothermal with solar and battery backup. What would that really cost, and what would it really save? Because once it's there, you have minimal operating costs. You don't have a fuel
again,
cost.
Again, nothing we're doing would preclude that as being an option in the future. And that's very important through this study, that we weren't doing something to the system of the building that would, like, oh no, you can't tie solar thermal into that now. Now it's going to be $100,000 to reroute this or do something different. And again, you know, within the capsule of this five-year time, it is still, from the cost side of it, you're still coming out ahead.
And what would be, my question too is, in terms of, say we hit that ideal situation where that's the scenario we go forward, I mean, what is the timeline in a project like that to begin with?
It's probably 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't
my concern right now is that we have an imminent issue
system failure
where we have to, no matter what we do in terms of that step, we have to, in the immediate future, have a reliable heating source.
I guess my concern under those circumstances is that we don't get the answer in 5 years, we don't act on it in 5 years because we have a brand new system. And it's actually, in my mind, let me just finish my thought. It's very similar to allowing the dance camera plant to be built, because once it's there, it's going to be, you know, if it is built, it's going to be operating for decades to come. And I'm not convinced that we should spend $500,000. I understand the urgency, but to spend $500,000 and then hope that down the road we have a more energy efficient a system that really zeroes out our
the way I understand those concerns, but the way I look at it is that either way, no matter whether what's executed in terms of solar and geothermal, that there's going to be a investment in replacing the current system. And I actually look at it that either that this system is easier to walk away from as a backup than, because of the price range and the efficiency, is easier for us to walk away from to take those steps than a $5 million investment in just keeping the current system. You know what I'm saying? It's actually, I think it easier, this is easier to walk away from than the investment, because we're going to have to do something. And what was the cost again if we actually replace the boilers?
It's in the capital right now around $500,000.
Yeah.
And I think right now it's $500,000 for natural gas or $500,000 for fuel oil.
Mm-hmm. So either, you know, I don't think there's, you know, I don't think it's one's easier to, you know, there's not going to be, no matter what, something right now has to happen. Mm-hmm. And the ability to, you know, if we, that's the way I look at it in terms of, the walking away is going to be whether we want to actually walk away.
I just am very concerned. I know we have to do something now, but I am very concerned that once this is in place, somebody's going to want to extend its life rather than move to a truly, you know, to a zero net energy system.
But the problem is we can't spend 5 years in an imminent failure state.
I would just add, an imminent failure state that a reasonable person, when the system was installed 12 years ago and made active 12 years ago, would be impossible to anticipate. These boilers, the ordinary useful life of these, I would expect, would be
20 or 30.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
I mean,
I know.
And the fact of the matter is we're going to have to do something, because we're facing the prospect of imminent failure.
They're uninsurable. They have been. Each one of them has been repaired.
Again, to Jonathan's point, this is something that will be easier to walk away and transition out of. And it's maybe I'll say it this way, man. Maybe it's the best of a bad choices that we have. Unfortunate choices that we face immediately. But I don't know right now that there's another practical alternative.
So what I'm saying is, we have to have a system in place that works within 6 months. I mean, we can potentially have temperatures that we have to take care of these people within 6 months. If we were ready to go with a $5 million project, then I would say, let's go with that. Mm-hmm. But most of those projects, we would have to at least consider in this site that we have a combustion backup. And so we might end up spending this $500,000 after the study, if we don't feel that we have, you know, if we feel like we have to have redundancy. Right now, we have to have redundancy within the combustion system. So I think that, and we're spending $220,000 to Central Hudson for the right to walk away.
Yes.
So if we, what would be bad, I think, is if we did this system for $250,000 and tied ourselves in for 10 years with Central Hudson. That would be the worst alternative. I am willing to take $220,000 taxpayer money for the right to get us on that renewable system, and I expect the taxpayers to hold us accountable if we don't do it as soon as possible.
And the only thing I would just say, chime in, it can't be discounted at all that Central Hudson is right now in the middle of a replacement, and the crews are deployed. I mean, if this was something that if we put it off, that and then we find ourselves in trying to study this or situation, and then being forced to replace, then you have the cost of redeployment and getting people in. This is economy that they're there, they're not working. They're working. The crews are in active during their active season, and I don't know.
Oh, it's a tough one. Just dance camera. That is how many times greater investment. I mean, this is $500,000, so we have to think about it. But $500,000 in a facility of this nature that has over $1 million a year annual energy cost is a very different matter than the billions of dollars of building a plant. So I think this is more akin to almost a residential replacement and a residential decision that you might do this right now because you're not so sure about geothermal yet, but you change your mind in a couple of years and put in the geothermal if it's your questions on it are satisfied.
Yeah, I don't quite understand what, you know, people say that the various renewables are not ready, and when I look into it, every single one, including storage, is. What was the concern about?
I should probably put it on the record, but I have a friend who is the spouse of an elected official and works at a library. And we were having this conversation because I'd really like to put geothermal in my own home, and the technology is not quite ready for radiators in an old home, you know. But we were talking about it, and her feeling was that she really didn't like the way the system worked at the library, that there were all sorts of problems in terms of the colder months, not being able to get the temperature up.
It's a slow system. It doesn't react like that.
And also, you need to have it so tight and so sealed in the library itself that they were having to run units that would flush fresh air in and out. And so for a variety of different reasons, she felt like the technology, at least in this location, and there might be other forms of geothermal where it works just fine, but for her, she felt like it had not promised everything. It did not deliver everything it promised at this particular moment.
We had the opposite experience, and it was, in some ways it was a similar experience, but in Rosendale, when we put in 20 geothermal wells in the rec center, and it just took understanding how to use it, but people were complaining. The other thing is that well-insulated buildings are going to be airtight, and you're probably going to need in the extreme weathers, in fall and spring, you can open a window. But in winter and summer, if you're heating or cooling, and the building is closed, you're going to need a heat recovery ventilation system. And that also takes energy, but, you know, we've got to put the renewable energy in place to make these systems work. My biggest concern is the degree of urgency in the IPCC report, and it, you know, I just feel like we keep deferring the actions that we should have taken. You know, this building science has been around for years, and it was not used. It was not employed when the law enforcement center.
You know, I'll just say my feeling is none of that's a deal breaker for me. If they had the technology to put it in, I'd suffer through, you know, like a little breeziness to have geothermal. You know,
yeah.
So I don't think it's, you know, but
yeah.
I understand the need in other venues to have a redundant system in some circumstances. Well, and I do agree with you that you are absolutely right to make us pause right, and make us really consider whether this is the only alternative, because it's that urgent. So I want to thank you for doing that.
Yeah, I don't sleep too well at night anymore since I took Al Gore's climate reality training, Kathy.
I know I'm a guest here, and I appreciate everybody's indulgence. If this were not a jail or a hospital, I would be agreeing with you. I don't think that we can ask a 277,000 square foot building to be our pilot project for the county on this. It's where people have to be held in secure conditions. So if we were talking about this building needing this replacement, I would say we would have to, you know, bite the bullet. Right. We can leave if the system doesn't function as we need it.
Right.
But if a library is having trouble, you know, it is still a technology, though it was developed long ago, has not been implemented. And so I wouldn't want to put a geothermal system on that building today, on that building, without a backup. So at Public Works, I was willing to say, okay, let's make a protest, you know, on this. I just, for energy and environment to, you know, for anybody on energy and environment to vote against this at this point is painful to me, because I think then we'll be spending a lot more time explaining all of this to the public when we should be moving forward. But I appreciate you letting me say all of this.
And I would offer to you that concurrent with the master plan for the jail, there's one for this building, and we're moving this building through New York Prize because it has a boiler replacement.
That's part of the flex tech.
So every place where we have a big capital on heating, we're trying to say, let's pause and do a master plan so we don't lock ourselves into some system where we can't either, you know, we're not adequately considering renewables, or we're somehow acting in a way that precludes us from easily being able to do that as we can.
You know, I know Steve Noble approached Dandelion to find out if we could do something similar in Kingston as they did in Rhinebeck, and Dandelion said, you know, we're overwhelmed right now, no, but, you know, we'll... And I know that there have been people in the city of Kingston who have contacted Dandelion individually, and in one instance it didn't work because there was rock and stuff like that. But
this building is right next to the Kirkland, which has geothermal, has all the well logs. That whole parking lot is full of geothermal wells.
That's cool.
So we're pushing over here too. So
that's cool.
All right. Well,
I didn't know.
Any other comments or questions for Amanda? We have two resolutions in front of us, and unless anybody else has any other concerns, I think we should take action.
I just want to say thank you again for raising all of those
matters. Yeah, and I am just... So, you know, I am going to vote another protest, no vote, and I'm going to also talk to people that I know that are in the business. I know Dandelion, but I know a lot of other people who, you know, have been doing green building and renewable energy work for 15, 20 years, so maybe longer than that. I want to have some of my own questions answered. But I really do understand the emergency and everything that everyone has said. So at this point, I'd like to call the question.
I'd make a motion to block the two together.
We sort of already did.
Oh, I know you did.
Can you open them? So.
Okay. We'll make it. So thank you. On resolution number 203 and resolution number 205, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? And the motion carries 4-1.
Kathy, every rule needs an exception to prove it.
I'm not losing any sleep.
All right, we still have one more item of business.
Two more items of business.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thank you. And let's see, going back to,
I think 128 is the first
one. Yeah, Resolution 128, which is amending a local law requiring restaurants and fast food service establishments to provide plastic, wait a second, let me read it here. requiring restaurants and fast food establishments provide plastic beverage straws solely upon request.
Move it.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion?
I just want to thank our colleagues in the other caucus for the votes to refer it back to committee so we can move forward this month.
I just also want to say that I'm still mindful of some of the concerns about the resolution as it currently stands that came from both Mary and Brian in terms of it being under-inclusive, that there were other plastic components that we might take a more comprehensive view of. And while I'm willing to take what I can get here and go with the plastic straws, I do appreciate you know, their perspective, and I think there's something to it.
And part of mine is still, I think we can partner with businesses and get further without telling them what they have to do. So that's mine. Still
in
partner.
I do not understand what the reluctance is to amend this everywhere it says plastic beverage straws to say plastic beverage straws, stirrers, and utensils. That simple change would mean that wooden stirrers could be put out and not and be compliant. Compostable utensils could be put out. The stores that are green leaders in my district are already doing it on all three. Woodstock just passed a resolution that does those three items plus.
Go Woodstock.
Plus plastic
well
lids.
Said and well taught.
Thank you.
I think plastic lids get you into a different realm.
Yeah.
But the reason that I supported this being sent back to committee is that I have become unwilling to have plastic beverage straws on a we must ask first basis when stirrers and cutlery or utensils, I guess is easier to say, are not grouped with them. They could still have plastic. They just have to ask for it. So if people have bamboo chopsticks, as some restaurants do, they would be compliant. Why not? What's the reluctance?
That's an interesting question. What is the reluctance?
Tracy, when she finally understood what I was asking for, last month, I thought she was agreeable. I haven't spoken with her about it, but she said, oh, maybe it's not such a big deal. And I think people were thinking that it was going to be some, you know, major revision to accomplish this. But I think it's adding two words in a search and replace function.
Are there objections I'm not thinking about? I mean, it
may be substantive. We'd have to go back from the public hearing, perhaps.
Huh.
I would interpret it as what Fawn just said.
You have to have another public hearing.
You'd have to have another public hearing.
This change was called for at the first public hearing. So it's actually being responsive to the public as well. That not only was it called for by environmentalists, but was called for by one of the businessmen
district. I would recommend we move forward with this and we introduce that.
As an amendment to this?
No, introduce that as we can...
Next?
As a separate... Because I believe, you know... It'll just get this going forward.
Well, it's the old adage, the bird in the hand. We have the votes to get this passed.
So right, but you have your businesses and your environment.
Yeah, I'm not saying we can't do those things.
Yeah, but...
It's about tactics.
Well, and also, we did everything but restaurants with the plastic bag ban, or sort of. We really got other kinds of retailing. Restaurants... especially in my district and in Woodstock, are asking that we do it all at once.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like the nickeling and diming, and they want something that they understand. I think you've gotten it more understandable with the revisions that you've done over the past couple of months. It would take a month, 2 months to get this, and during that time, every time we notice a public hearing on this, we're doing education about the transition. So I don't see that it's a loss to...
Let me just ask...
amend it.
If...
David?
If somebody did make a motion and it was approved to amend, would that motion be a substantive enough to have another public hearing?
Yes.
Yes?
Anytime you change a local law with something substantive, it requires public hearing. There's no question in my mind. I mean, to not require a public hearing, you got to be eliminating like a comma that didn't make any sense or a spelling error. If you're putting in utensils, that you may not think it's a big deal, but it's certainly substantive. Otherwise, you know, otherwise we'd have a sliding scale of what. I mean, you're changing the law, and that's why she's arguing about it, because it's a change in the law. She wants it. Go to public hearing. It doesn't matter that you think you're responding to what at the public hearing. It was not noticed before, so people didn't show up to protest it. So you got to go again. And
yes.
If you want to tell you the story of the New Paltz Wetlands Law, which is. We responded to the public hearing and didn't go back to the county on that and got whacked. So,
No, I agree that it is substantive. My point is just that if you do the public hearing, people will come out in support of adding this on. They already did that before. So they'll come out in support of adding it on, then we add it on, and you've got everybody moving in the same direction. If you pass this, you still have environmentalists, including myself, who are confused by why are you just doing straws? And you'll have to go, you know, we'll have to go and amend the law.
Put in place another resolution to...
Or do a separate...
Well,
it also goes back to an argument that you made in the beginning of this process was that it was too happening too fast.
I think that...
So there is a counter that we go, you know...
Yeah, but
also
there's a ranking of badness here.
Well,
and
it's all bad.
And the people who don't want it, you know, or think it's too fast. And I'm sympathetic to that, but I think we should do something. The people who want us to do it all at once think that's better than doing it slowly, you know, ripping the Band-Aid off slowly. So, truly, you know, there was somebody at the public hearing from my district who said that, but other businesses in my district have said it. And Bread Alone, which is in my district and in Woodstock and in Saugerties, has said, why don't you go ahead and do all of them? We're already compliant.
Right.
Yeah.
And so why not follow the green leaders rather than, I don't know who wanted to just do straws.
Brian?
I can tell you my opinion on this has been evolving continuously and shifting continuously.
Yeah. Yeah.
I started out dead opposed to it. Then I find myself liking the discussion that this brings up. Then I thought maybe it would make a terrific memorializing resolution. Then throw in the whole kit and caboodle in a memorializing resolution. I'm still inclined to vote no for the reasons I stated last month, but also thinking there is enforcement language in here, and I don't know how in a practical sense that can the enforcement and penalties can be meted out. Again, but I will say, on the other side, I was with dinner with some folks the other night, and last night, as a matter of fact, and we sat at a table, and when we all ordered our water with our meal, we all asked, no straw in the water, and we all made a point of having that conversation. So I love the conversation part. I love the awareness it's given me of single-use plastics and the expanding awareness of it, but... Again, I just don't know how I can't right now. I'm going to be a no vote for those reasons stated. But again, I think these genuinely goodwill. It's been a goodwill. This is brought forward, but I just can't be a yes vote on it yet. But I do love the discussion that's brought, and I think that's really the most. I think even the sponsor of the legislation resolution has said that was one of the most valuable things they were looking to achieve, was having a broad discussion on it. So I don't know. I just. Look, I'll be a no here, but I don't know how I'll be 2 weeks from now on the floor of the legislature. Okay,
oh, legislator Hebner.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke with the one spot chairwoman Bartels today. It was her request that it move forward, unless it was going to fail.
I hadn't talked with her on this.
So you know, but I'm totally open to continuing those conversations. We couldn't amend it tonight. And knowing where people are, and I have a much stronger perceptual feeling of where people are in this specific resolution going forward. But I think 100%, whatever I can do to be helpful for continuing those other elements that you said, 100% on board. But that's where, you know, I'm going to be.
I just want to say, you know, right, I think law has a socializing function, and even if the ability to make sure that this law is followed becomes kind of difficult, I think the socializing aspect of a law, right, is really crucial, because people will be thoughtful about whether or not they take straws. I already am in a way that I just wasn't before. I'm really torn. I think Kathy's absolutely right. It should be more comprehensive. I don't know why we just focused on straws. It was an oversight. And maybe we're shooting ourselves in the foot by not taking the time to address these other issues more comprehensively. I'm willing to defer to the chairwoman if she wants to have it move forward, but I also think we should follow up very quickly. You know, we don't have to spend a ton of time. We've already done a lot of the work here with the succeeding resolution, which incorporates all that you suggest. So I'm going to be a yes. But again, with the acknowledgement that it's kind of been sloppy, you know, we probably could have been more comprehensive, and sometimes that's just the way it goes. But it's a bird in the hand, and I think we should take it.
Yes, please. And my end game is in agreement with everybody, but the process is not. I don't believe doing it through a law is going to get us as far. So I'll be a no.
I just want to ask why we can't amend it now. It would still require a second. Pardon?
Because the sponsors aren't here.
Yeah, I mean, but also we get
neither of the sponsors are here.
Yeah, well, I mean, we get, but also, I mean, I think
it's in the title.
So, I mean, we have to look at, right, like what specifically are we including? What are we not including?
Kind of starting from scratch again.
Yeah.
Well, it's a local law. I mean, if you. When you say this is not like amending a resolution. This is a local law which is governed by the municipal home rule law. So you're essentially creating a new draft of a local law which has to go through the whole thing.
Okay.
So that, especially a public hearing, but the other stuff too. So it's not like you make a motion to amend a resolution and then you can go back and you're amending a local law.
When does this law take effect? I don't remember. After being filed, I don't have it in front of me.
This one was right away, isn't it?
Would be in the law, not in the resolution part.
Right. You should have a section of the date.
I think it's like the last. It should be the last paragraph in the law.
Can I ask, Manny?
3 months subsequent to filing in the office of the Secretary of State. Yeah.
So Manny, your sense is that it would be ideal to amend.
Yes, that is my sense. I just don't, you know, I'm not going to hold it back.
Yeah, it can still be
to amend, but I do think it should be amended. After all, if Woodstock can do it, the rest of the county can.
Not anyone can be Woodstock. But.
And, you know, I know in Marbletown...
Marbletown did this.
Did the straws, and it's been very well received, and there has not, you know, been a problem.
I was just thinking about plastic bags. We passed it, and then we amended it before it took effect, and that's what I was just wondering if it would be possible to pass this.
Yeah, we had a hearing on the plastic bags.
That's right,
when
we amended, we didn't.
If there's agreement to amend
you'd have
this,
to have another public hearing. But you could have the effective date... be, instead of 3 months from the time you file it with the Department of State, it could be a month from the time you, like, if you did it,
yeah.
If you did it for
when
next
you
month.
Amend.
I'm more agreeable to that, because there's still provisions in here that I don't like at all. I'm sort of with Mary on this.
Yeah.
I think this is, you know, really, you know, my constituents, again, have complained that they don't want the sign, to have to put the sign up. But that's the way that we're going to check for enforceability or something. So, I'm putting up with some stuff in this law that I don't like, so I'm trying to get some stuff in that I do like.
Right.
If there's some agreement to amend this one, but if you're saying we have this one and then we have another one, no, because if I'm going to have to write a whole new one, then I want to get rid of some of the stuff in this. So I think it would, you know, be a longer fight again if we don't do it by an amendment to this.
But I would argue, in the sense of agreeing with you on the issue itself, that the issue of plastic straws in a restaurant and the way this is modeled is much different than things like cutlery.
In what way?
In that a plastic, if you want to use a straw, because, you know, unless you have a physical handicap or a physical reason why, you can pick up your cup and business goes on, you can drink. But if you can't put any cutlery out, and then you're going to have people choose between if they want metal or plastic.
No, compostable cutlery or bamboo cutlery.
But that's much better alternative
for cutlery and for stirrers than there are for straws.
So this is far different than when we're talking about color. It has a much more different impact on the function of a business.
How did they do it?
So this is an optional thing.
The cutlery shouldn't be optional?
That's what I'm saying. So what I'm saying is, this is much different than... So this is an optional thing. Restaurants are still allowed to purchase plastic straws and have them.
I see your point.
But what I'm saying... So really, what we want to achieve with cutlery, and we agree, is we're talking about a ban.
Or do you want it to be optional?
No, because most restaurants use...
reusable
for their in-house customers, not all, but most, and they use the plastic when they're giving takeout, and so it comes in a little bag, and so you just use an alternative. There are a few places, I think you're right, where they actually put out plastic cutlery, but there's such a good alternatives that I think it's not as far-reaching as you're saying, but I'm saying I think it's a much different because it's a necessary function of eating
that it would be
to have
that it would actually be weaker to put it in this than to have it in a standalone, because they could easily get around it because this is optional.
Right, for real efficacy you want a ban, and you're
but I'm saying even if you amended that and put it, unless you put language where essentially you'd be saying plastic cutlery is banned but straws are optional, or everything's banned.
You'd just be saying if you're going to use plastic in your restaurant, you're going to have to ask each customer, do they want plastic utensils, and you'll be in Brian's category of feeling stupid, and so you'll have a comments that you brought up about the fast food vendors asking, do you want a straw with your to-go beverage, makes you feel silly to ask it. Well, it would make these restaurants feel silly to say, do you want utensils with your meal because they have plastic. So it would be a strong incentive to switch
but
to
I'm
one of the alternatives.
But I'm thinking about the but doesn't it hit
immediate
with mass, where the majority of the mass, like in terms of larger dining, like dining halls and dining, you know what I mean? I'm saying, you know, there's it's a much
you're thinking about the cafeteria and the hospital.
And
they use plasticware because of...
Hold on a second.
So I'm just saying this is a much bigger, I think, than just... This is, like we've always argued, that this is no means to an end, but it's a step forward versus what I'm thinking, like it's a much... Utensils, I think, is a higher level of a undertaking.
Raise different conceptual issues. And you're saying you could even go further.
Yeah, I mean...
I'm going to just call time because Legislator Warro's been trying to get a word in edgewise.
But I just want, as far as the compostables go, we have to remember that really they're not, at
very
this point, beneficial until we have a process... For us to compost them.
Although there are people working on that, and bamboo, organic, you know, natural organic, well, I guess corn based is also, but bamboo will degrade in a landfill very nicely.
Yeah.
And some of the other ones are being made to do that more. And what's his name? Shabazz is, and his crew are working on some digesting elements for that.
Yeah.
And they're not the only ones, but
But at this point,
that's a fair point.
You know, even though like Olive Garden does the compostable, it doesn't matter because I mean you can feel really good about it. I was feeling pretty good about it, and then I realized it didn't really.
but that is going to change. Hopefully, very quickly, because we have a law ready to go. We just have to align it with the state law. Hold on one second. I just wanted to have us think about whether or not I'm feeling like I want to read the Woodstock law, because I'm assuming that they worked a lot of this out.
Who was the group they worked with?
Iris Bloom from Protect Our Waters drafted it, and they have a slow phase in on this because theirs is essentially an ask first law to begin with for I think it's a year, and then they ban. And her belief is, with you know, from experience and research, that during that year of the approach this way, you get that social change. And so there, by the time the ban comes, the businesses will be really already there, which is to Legislator Warro's point, is, you know, why make your businesses, which are an essential part of our tourism economy here, feel like we're doing something bad to them with this? And so I mean,
I haven't had a single business tell me that we're doing something bad with this.
Well, Alex Steers, who runs several businesses on Route 28, came and said it in public hearing. So I think at least one has.
But I think also some of them are busy doing their business and not even aware of, you know, they find out later when it's too late. But
Dallas Hopwinger.
I can imagine.
Dallas Hopwinger.
Let me guess what he thinks.
Doesn't want to ask before giving a plastic straw.
No, it's Dallas Hopwinger.
No, but
cultural environment.
I know the idea with takeout is they automatically put
up utensils in
and
a straw.
You know, the restaurants I go to for takeout on a regular basis know that I'm likely to bring my own takeout containers, but also I did that. I brought my own container. And I brought my own bag, and when I got home, there were plastic utensils in it, and it's just habit.
Yeah.
They didn't ask me, do you need utensils? Anyway, what is the pleasure? I know we've kind of gone round and round about this. Where have we landed?
Look, my feeling is, like, I don't want this to be contentious. It need not be contentious. I think there's goodwill in trying to get this right. And so we've got two divergent pathways, and I don't think we nailed the right approach, and I can be persuaded to steam ahead put it out there and vote, and at least, you know, we'll have this in place. But I can also easily be persuaded, and I'm much more likely to be willing to vote it out if we can do the amendment as you suggested, right? So we could amend and then have a hearing. That seems to me to be a nice kind of compromise.
But you're saying we can't, right?
We can. Mm-hmm. It's not amending a resolution. We've got to amend the local law. If you want to amend the local law right now, which I need to get my head around a little bit, we can sit down and try to do it. And then, you tell me about the procedures here in the legislature. If I come in and say, I want to do this local law, does it have to go to Vicky? Can we sit down here in a committee and write it? Or does it have to go to Vicky first? End up in everybody's. Does every legislator have to get it first, and then it has to be referred here? Or can we just sit here and do it?
If you amend it, it's my understanding that the sponsors have to agree to the amendment.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know who the sponsors are.
Tracy and Joe Maloney.
It's just not like amending resolution.
Yeah, so
it's going to be a board. It's a
they're
substantial.
I don't know if a resolution is amended.
That's what I'm saying.
Joe is not going to want this, and you're saying Tracy doesn't want it.
No. She didn't say that she didn't want this.
She wanted it to move forward.
We just strictly said, we didn't even talk about amendments or anything like that. Strictly just said, if there's no vote, if the votes aren't there for it, you know, push to postpone. If the votes are there for, but she would like to see it go forward.
I mean, I'm really torn.
That's all. She didn't say it had nothing to do with any
firm decision.
I
think there are at least three options. One is to try to amend it tonight, which sounds like it's difficult and doesn't gain us
because
that much.
Because they still would have to approve.
Yeah, well, what it would be is if they approved, then I think all Vicky would have to do is make the changes and schedule the public hearing. And maybe we could even introduce as a late resolution that the public hearing be at the next legislative meeting. And then we have the public hearing, and at the next meeting after that,
when do you want to have the public hearing?
At the next county
In 2 weeks?
No, it would be at that meeting we would have a vote on the motion to hold a public hearing.
That's my understanding.
In 2 weeks.
It would be late.
My understanding is that would if they have to approve the amendments before we vote on them.
Yes.
So we would have to come back and vote on any amendments. And it would also be late.
They have to do that in a legislative meeting? They can't do that in committee? Vote to approve the amendments.
Yeah, but we would have to. So
we have to have another meeting.
We'd have to. It'd have to be in. And, like, we can. So we would have to vote to take no action.
I think we could vote to make the. We don't know how to do it.
No, we can't.
So we can't
vote to make
it. The cleanest way for you to do it.
We can't vote on making any amendments until there's amendments that have been approved.
No debate.
Yeah, hello.
Is my understanding.
So, but could they approve those amendments at our legislative meeting in 2 weeks? And could we set the public hearing?
No, because it wouldn't have passed committee.
I see. So we have to come back to committee.
We'd have to advance it now as is, and then if they agreed, then we could. If they agreed, the amendments could be made on the floor.
Yeah.
But then they would have. But then it would be. Referred back. So no, I mean it would still have to be referred back and then go for
a public hearing.
It would be
2 to 3 months. And this is the reason it's good to get it right before you send it to the floor.
In terms of getting right, I just want to ask a question because Jonathan raised a point that I think both Mary and Brian were talking about. I was receptive to the idea that there's a difference between straws and cutlery. And the word that struck me is gratuitous. Straws are gratuitous. We actually used to have a society that didn't have straws. And I think there's also an education component. Yeah, I think at some point we're getting around to the idea that we don't need all this excess plastic, and I think that's part. People are going to see that with straws, and it's going to happen very, and paper and plastic, it's going to happen quickly. My question to you guys is this, do we want to have the same legal structure for dealing with straws as we do with cutlery? And I wasn't sure I got the right answer. I would say yes, because we used
to have a society that didn't have plastic utensils either.
Right now, let me explain. The idea with the straws is we're giving people a choice, and the idea is that over time, they're going to say no, because the plastic is going to seem stupid and superfluous, and that was the education component you guys were
talking
about.
It's the plastic, yeah. not Brian.
I'm just wondering whether we're convinced at this point that the same mechanism is going to work well for us with the plastic cutlery, and I don't know the answer to that question.
So let's go back to the three options.
I think we're kicking out amending it here
because of all the problems we've said, and I don't think we're quite to the point where we might be with Mary of going to an all-voluntary system. And I think that the compromise of pass this with its 3-month time frame and then agree between now and next month to come ready to try to have an amendment, a new law that dealt with the stirrers and the utensils that we pass with a shorter time frame for implementation so that they both implement at the same time.
My only comment to that is it might work out that once we've had a chance to read Woodstock and think it through, that it could be an amendment to the existing law, or it could be its own law. I do think that the idea that you said earlier of if we pass it and we can't amend it here.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, they're not here. The sponsors aren't here. If it was amended on the floor, but the main thing is we haven't quite done enough research on the stirrers and the utensils. But I like the idea of doing it sooner than later, because I think what you said about let's just get this going. But I expect that with the cutlery, if it's compostable, I mean, even then they would probably want to ask, but that it's the same thing, that it's a question of do you want to include utensils with your takeout? You know, it's really just another
and
question.
Now has bamboo utensils sitting for self-serve, which is where I think these restaurants and food agencies should go. They switch to an alternative that is not covered by the law, and they don't have to ask anybody anything.
May I respectfully make a suggestion?
Yes.
You could pass it tonight as it sits and possibly amend it on the floor to just change the effective date. If you think you need more time to look at plastics, make the effective date, instead of 3 months from the date it's filed with the state, make it 4 months, 5 months. And that wouldn't be substantive. In my opinion, I would bow to Dave's on that. But
I don't think anybody'd sue us over it.
And then that would give you time to look at if you want to make a change into it and bring it back as a one-piece law or as two laws or how you want to proceed with it. It would give you a couple of weeks to also build a consensus and see what the sponsors and your caucuses think about those paths. In my experience, when we try to amend stuff in committee and do stuff, it gets messy.
Chaos.
Just especially for...
I was thinking a similar thing. I don't know whether change in the effective date is substantive. My guess is that it's not, but I would have to check it out. But I was thinking something similar. If you just pass it, and then if you end up doing the cutlery law, and you find in order to get it done, you need more time, but you want to get them both effective at the same time, you can come back at that point and amend the effective date of this law. You got 3 months to do it. If you end up needing another month to squeeze in the cutlery law, you just come back and the restaurants want it harmonized. You can come back and make this 4 months or something like that. That's
a similar thing to what Foreign's saying, but it
gives us more flexibility.
Yeah. So you just come back and amend it in the local law, and then
we
give restaurants. So that's a possibility as well. And it's a fail-safe.
How do you feel about that, Matt?
I'm ready to move forward, but I do want us to look at Woodstock and how to best address the other two.
I'll have that sent around tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Also, if you did postpone it again in session, because you want it to come back, it wouldn't be any different than if you didn't pass it tonight in the timeline.
Yes.
I would just throw that out there, too.
That it can be referred back.
Mm-hmm. You could make the changes, set a public hearing next month for the following month. You could have a public hearing on caucus night and vote on it the following week. So it wouldn't be postponed,
Indefinitely.
You just...
Can someone reach out to Tracy and explain the complicated
I think Fawn has
it. Apparently you've had these conversations.
I think I can tell her what the concerns are.
Yeah, because
she can listen to the tape.
I mean, it's not that we don't want to move forward.
You do want to move forward with it.
We do want to, and that's really, and what's holding us back is
could we make it better?
So it's a different kind of, let's not.
No, definitely. I'll definitely talk to her.
To achieve it, and I think that's really important to convey.
Well, I think you're concerned about whether utensils are, it's fair to just put them into this model, is a legitimate concern. I think it's overridden by the weight of what this would do, which is force alternatives, but so I don't think I can argue your point as effectively.
Yeah, no, I'll definitely talk to you.
Yeah.
And I think Dave clarified really well what you were getting.
Yeah, yeah. But
suddenly crystallized.
That logic he does for
you. Also, the straws are low-hanging fruit here. Yeah. I mean, people are going to start saying, why am I dealing with this? But I don't really need this stuff. And I think that's part of the conversation.
Yeah.
So right now, it's a matter of either postponing or voting it out and then dealing with it. So,
my preference would be to vote for it just because... I think we still have a lot further discussion on the other. I would just like to get this to move forward. Also, with respects to Chairwoman Bartels, then postpone.
Okay, so if we're ready, I'd like to call the question, unless there's more conversation. Okay, on resolution number 128, adopting the proposed Local Law Number 20 of 2018, as amended, requiring restaurants and fast food services establishments to provide plastic beverages solely upon request. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Aye.
Okay.
So it passes 3-2.
So
and those are quarreling.
Oh, yes, for the record.
For the record.
The is it a motion? The resolution passed 3-2. And now we're up to resolution number 175, appointing members to the recycling oversight.
173. Did I put 175 on?
No, it says 173, and I need glasses. Or I won't be able to drive after May 26th.
I'll move for discussion.
Second.
Oh,
you can just pass them.
So please.
Yeah.
Okay.
I moved for discussion, and Lynn seconded it.
Thank you.
And it's been moved and seconded?
Yeah. And then I'll also make a motion, because they're blank right now, right?
Yes. Yes.
I'll make a motion to add the names of Jonathan Kaplan and John Thomas Shoemaker to the resolution.
Mm-hmm. So we're adding Mr. Kaplan as the commercial hauler.
Yes, sorry, to the commercial hauler. And then John Shoemaker to be added as an at-large member.
So...
Some needs to...
I'll second.
On the...
So do we have to vote on the
amendment? We have to vote on the amendment first.
Yes. On the amendment?
Aye.
Aye. And on the resolution appointing the two members, the two aforesaid members.
As amended.
As amended. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. The resolution number 173 is approved as amended. Okay. Do we have any new business?
Looks like there's some new business
right on the table. Just if anyone would like to take flyers or postcards to hand out or set on a stand somewhere in your various locations for the great Hudson River Revival, June 15th and 16th. And this is honoring, this particular year is honoring the 100th birthday of Pete Seeger and the 50th anniversary of the launch of the sloop on May 17th, and there's all kinds of wonderful events going on around that. And if anyone would like to come to Beacon on the 16th, I think we're holding a press conference, and you'd all be welcome to make a comment. Okay, and then in terms of the Climate Smart Committee, I think the main thing that is going on there is related to the Green Business Challenge, and on May 20th, and I have put flyers, but I forgot to, juggling a lot of things, I forgot to send them to be printed out, but we'll all be back in time to get those around. The Saugerties Chamber and their Climate Smart Committee and the County Climate Smart Committee are hosting another training for businesses and volunteers to encourage businesses to participate in the Green Business Challenge, and in particular to implement climate solutions with a support system and enough information. And we have speakers, including Colin Atkins from the Cornell Cooperative Extension. Evelyn Wright is going to go over the steps that are necessary, and T.J. Rizzo will talk about Central Hudson's incentives. And there are now free energy audits for businesses, which has been a long time coming. What Amanda was talking about with the flex tech is valuable, but still the county has to pay part of that. But now it's my understanding that there are actually free energy audits for businesses to encourage them to figure out what their logical next step is. Anything else, Climate Smart?
There is a Flip the Switch event at Frost Valley in 2 weeks. They've added, I think it ended up being a 0.5 or 0.6 megawatt solar installation, and it's 692 panels. It's going to provide a big percentage of their electricity. And it's a by invitation only event, but if anybody from this committee would like an invitation, I'd be happy to, I'm sure they would love to have you, and so we just get your name in and send the invitation. It's May 18th, a Saturday.
I'm already double booked that day.
Yeah, it's a busy, last couple, next couple weekends
that
are crazy.
Saturday morning, 10 to 8.
Any other old business?
Saturday's the
I want to add June 4th in Saugerties. I set up, well, this was my idea. It's not going to be exactly what I wanted it to be. I wanted to do something, an event that was definitive on recycling, but of course it's not definitive. So, but the Resource Recovery Agency is coming and doing a presentation, and I plan on contacting the local haulers for their list, because I forgot that we didn't flow control recycling. So the different haulers, take different things.
Right.
So
add that to the wish list.
So we'll help that. I know.
Well, maybe the Recycling Oversight Committee can help work that out.
Yeah.
And just because this committee does care about these things, there is a forum on the construction and demolition debris dumping that is happening in Sardis on Route 212.
Is that on caucus night, though?
It is caucus night. So this,
someone
I'm
need
not
a caucus in line. It's at 7, though. Yeah. I mean, oh, not for you. Sorry.
So with the remote to the beach, please all go.
Yeah. Oh, no, I just saw that before, and I was like, God damn it.
I know. Okay, do I hear a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.